You're listening to Syntax, the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. Strap yourself in and get ready. Here is Scott Tolinsky and Wes Boss.
Welcome to Syntax, the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. Today, we've got a show for you on two things, Drizzle and databases. So Drizzle is an ORM that allows you to interact and have queries and insert data to different databases. So we thought we would explain what Drizzle is and how it works alongside explaining a bunch of stuff about MySQL, Postgres, and SQLite. So those are the three databases that Drizzle supports, and being able to explain their features and context of Drizzle we thought would be super helpful. So buckle up for a database-filled episode.
Yeah. Databases, huh? If you're working in databases and ORMs, chances are you're going to mess up your code. You're going to have some slow queries. Yes. You know, one of my favorite new features on Sentry is the query performance tracker. You know, when we were building our Syntax site, some of our queries ended up being a little bit slow, and I don't know if I would have noticed that I was using the wrong ORM method to query. When you're trying to find one, I wasn't doing, I believe it was find unique. I think I was doing find first instead of find unique or something. And because of that, we had a bunch of slow queries. And I was able to see that because of Sentry's slow query monitoring. So if you sign up for Sentry at sentry.io, that's sentry.io, use the coupon code TASTYTREAT, you'll get 2 months for free. And the show's presented by Sentry. So let's get into, first and foremost, Drizzle. Just a little bit of what is Drizzle. Drizzle is an ORM. Basically, an ORM is a tool that makes typically working with databases easier. It's a way that you can map your database to some code. That way, you can query off of your database and have it be just a nicer way of working in it. Sometimes they give you type. Sometimes they give you validation. Sometimes they give you just things that just straight up working raw with a database won't. And so Drizzle is a newer ORM for JavaScript. I've used plenty of ORMs myself in all different contexts, and Drizzle is certainly a little bit more of a modern outlook on the ORM. And the ORM itself prides itself in being a little bit more SQL-like, as in you can write chained methods that are very SQL-like. However, there is a new query syntax, which is a little bit more ORM-like. Both of which are really nice. Overall, the library is a joy to work in. So it's no surprise that people are really liking Drizzle. There's also something called Drizzle Kit, which gives you more control over the ORM and your database. So Drizzle Kit can do things like running migrations for you. There's a config file where you can connect to your database. And those types of things just become a little bit easier, a little bit more hand-holdy, which as somebody like me, I'm not typically a database person. Yeah. Drizzle Kit is something that I really, really wanted within Drizzle. And that was one of the reasons I hadn't tried it yet, because it's like, I don't want to be writing that stuff myself. I don't feel like doing all of those things. Therefore, Drizzle Kit is, once that kind of dropped, it definitely opened up Drizzle a little bit for me, whether that is just working with your database itself more via migrations or...
The migration stuff is super cool. And we're going to talk about what migrations are in just a second, but being able to see the progress of how things changed over time and programmatically apply them is super handy, as well as the ability to pull schemas down from an existing database. So if you have somebody on your team that has been working, you just have a database, and you don't have the schema for it, it will like backwards pull it down, which is cool. Mm-hmm. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a sec. We're getting ahead of ourselves, but I thought, oh, that is super nifty. And then they have Drizzle Studio as well, which is, I always want this. Just a UI for visualizing all of your data. You know, like usually when you work with your data, you'll have to go and grab a database client. So what are the popular database clients out there? SQL Pro is one.
Tables Plus.
Table Plus is another one. Table Plus is the one that I've been using a lot lately. MongoDB Compass is another really nice one. And sometimes, especially when you're first...
Studio
3T. Oh, yeah. That's a big one. PHP MyAdmin is probably the OG one.
The OG.
And you just want some sort of UI for being able to straight up edit your data. It's the original admin interface, you know? Mm. And a lot of the ORMs, Prisma has this, and Drizzle has this, a couple of other ones have it. They will give you just a table view of all of your data. You can filter, you can sort really quickly. And it's really nice to have that when you haven't totally built out a full admin UI. Sometimes you just got to double click a row and type in the actual data.
Totally. I really greatly prefer having something like this. It's funny, Wes, I don't know about you, but for a long time, I just thought PHP MyAdmin like was MySQL. Like in my brain, because they were always so connected when I was working on whether it was Drupal or WordPress, it was like, all right, now you're into PHP MyAdmin. I always just like really connected those two software to be like the exact same thing. Oh, I'm working in MySQL now. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's true, because you can use it for everything. And back in the WordPress days, I would use that quite a bit to take database dumps, to be able you could change a password in there because they just MD5 the string in there. It was a pretty cool product. It's funny that it's still very much the same. It's been updated slightly, but it's been around for absolutely forever.
Yeah, I wonder what it would look like with a Drizzle Studio coat of paint, you know? Because Drizzle Studio, one of the things that it has going for it is the UI is super nice. And that shouldn't go overlooked. Anytime you're working in any of this stuff, a really nice UI goes a long way. Mm-hmm. There's also a product called Benchmarks, which I haven't really looked at Benchmarks. It's a newer thing. It's actually listed in their nav as new, but it's a way of really determining what's slow and fast. Is it your query? Where's any sort of slowdown you're having? It's interesting. I would want to dive more into Benchmarks. So we're probably not going to be covering that too much in this, but it exists. So it's important to know.
Yeah. I'm curious how this works, because like, is it like a proxy for all of your queries? I haven't done it, because generally I lean on using a database hosting provider. Usually when I pick somewhere to host my database, I'm not just spinning up a Linux server and launching MySQL in there. I'm going to go for some sort of PaaS, platform as a service. And that's going to allow you.
And why are you doing
that? Yeah, and they're going to email.
No, sorry. I'm asking you. So I'm asking you, why would you do that?
Because they provide a lot of, like, databases is scary, especially for people like us who are just, one day we're writing buttons and putting rectangles on a page, and the next day we're querying databases and backing up. And databases are extremely complex, and tools like Drizzle and Prisma make working with databases so much more accessible. However, there's still a lot that can go very wrong, and probably the biggest thing that can go wrong is that you can have slow database queries, right? And something like my MongoDB does this, my PlanetScale does this, is they'll email you when there is a extremely slow query or something that has run 10,000 times and is extremely slow, and they'll say, hey, maybe it's worth putting an index on this field because you've been filtering by this field quite often.
Word. Yeah. For me, databases is scary, as you mentioned, so... I don't want anybody to get in my database. That's just straight up, you know, any sort of anything I can do to mitigate potential data leak or anything like that, I'm going to be as cautious as you can possibly be. So that's where I'm at there.
Let's talk about the different types of databases. Specifically the ones that Drizzle support is Postgres, MySQL, and SQLite. So Postgres and MySQL are probably the two big databases. They've been around forever. They're sort of battle tested. They've fallen in and out of love over the years. And it seems like right now everybody is in love with Postgres and MySQL, especially because we're starting to see a lot of services built on top of them. So Postgres is a relational database, and that is the database behind things like Neon, which is a service, Supabase. Supabase does a lot more than just a database, but their database part is Postgres. Vercel Postgres is I call this the Trader Joe's Neon database because Versal just partners with Neon to resell their database.
That's the same thing for the Upstash, which is what we used for the Syntax cache, right?
And Cloudflare.
That's the Trader Joe's KV, key value store.
Maybe we should, can you explain Trader Joe's for the Brits and the Australians and I guess the Canadians?
Yeah, well, I don't know what you necessarily mean by Trader Joe's here. Yeah. Trader Joe's is just a grocery store. It's like it's owned by Aldi's, I believe. And it's I don't know. They kind of, it is kind of like expensive, oddly packaged, unique items.
Yeah, and so all of their items are like white labeled or relabeled, meaning that it's well known that a lot of Trader Joe's stuff is created by Kellogg's or like their cereal is probably made in the same factory as a lot of the big brands of cereal, but they'll just like rebrand it as like Trader Joe's, you know, when they're just Cheerios in the same box at the end of the day,
you know, upcharged a little bit.
Yeah, I think exactly. We don't have Trader Joe's in Canada, so a little sad, but we always go there. We always cross the border.
I tend to not go to Trader Joe's very much because there's that whole "it's going down in the Trader Joe's parking lot" YouTube video about like how crazy the Trader Joe's parking lots are. And it's seriously like that's the one of the most accurate videos of all time. Whoever designed the Trader Joe's parking lot said, how can we make this as frightening as possible? We're going to put in like 10 parking spaces and you can all just like fight over them. So it's so accurate. And that was like the big reason why it's like, all right, if we go to Trader Joe's, you have to calculate out at the time where nobody's going to be there because it's insane.
We went to the Trader Joe's in Brooklyn once and it was wild. Like it was like wrapped around the entire store. The line was almost going out the door just to pay. People working there are just like next, like just champs. Anyways, Postgres. What else? Zeta. Zeta uses Postgres. Railway is another popular host. They have Postgres. And then we also had the folks from Payload CMS on. Go back and listen to episode 700 with the folks from Payload. They use Postgres and Drizzle. So both of those things. But next up, we have the MySQL database. MySQL has been around forever. I don't think we need to explain a whole lot about what that is. The big name in MySQL right now for hosted is PlanetScale. That's what we're using on the Syntax website via Prisma ORM. And I'm a big fan of it. It allows you to like fork databases, which is kind of cool. Yeah. So like if Scott wants to work on a feature, he can just fork the database and he gets all the like fresh data rather than like some old data. So big fan of PlanetScale. It's kind of interesting. If you search like PlanetScale Verse or PlanetScale Alternatives, you often find people recommending Postgres, which is like people think PlanetScale has done such a good job that they think that PlanetScale is tech, which it kind of is because they do connection pooling and a lot of that stuff. But people use the word PlanetScale as if it were another database, even though it's MySQL.
Yeah, in that same regard, we mentioned Neon. Neon and PlanetScale are kind of analogous, right? Like Neon is to Postgres as PlanetScale is to MySQL. So they're very similar, where they're both do connection pooling, that type of thing. So if you do want that type of database, you want to do Postgres, go Neon. You want to do MySQL, go PlanetScale. And both have fairly generous plans too. You know, I'm rocking a free plan for my Neon DB that I'm using right now. And hey, I got a decent amount of people using this thing and I'm not even close to approaching the free limit. Now, granted, that's not a scalable thing to use the free plan, but hey, for a little side project, it's not bad, right?
Totally. That's the hope with a lot of these things is you just get your side project on and up and running. And then before you know it, you're $100 in a month on these different services, but it's well worth it. Now, a lot of people also have recommended just using one database and then using like database prefixes. We talked about this on a past show, is just pay for one database and then you can use prefixes to host multiple apps on it. Still makes me a little bit uneasy, but certainly something you could do.
Yeah, totally. There's also SQLite, which you know, I think it gets overlooked a lot, but SQLite, I think, is used very frequently in native app development to store data on a, you know, on an iPhone or an Android device or something like that. But it's basically just a straight up, it's a file on your computer. It's a local database. And it's super useful to just get going because it's SQL. I mean, you can spin up a SQLite DB in no time, not pay anything if you're just hacking away on something. And that's it. You got yourself a database cooking, and you don't have to be running a what's the one database service that you use, Wes, to get up and running, like with a MySQL database?
DB and Gin? What's it called?
DB Engine. I always thought it was DBegin, but it is DB Engine. Yes.
DB Engine. And so DB Engine is a little tool that you can run on your computer. And then what that will allow you to do is to start and stop your database servers. So you don't have to remember the like crazy CLI.
Yeah, no thanks.
Arguments that you need to pass and you have to sudo it. And it also.
You don't have to run WAMP, XAMPP, or MAMP.
Yeah. Big fan of that to be able to run it locally. But SQLite is amazing because it's just a file on your computer. You don't need a server. You're just up and running. And it's amazing. On the SQLite website, they say there are over a couple trillion SQLite databases in the world. And that's because there's SQLite databases probably in your thermostat. There's certainly lots of them on your phone. I was looking into how the Raycast extension for iMessage works. So there's an iMessage extension that will allow you to do the two-factor authentication codes. It'll just implement them into your browser.
Really?
And I was like, how do they do that? And it turns out that all of the iMessages on your computer, like the iMessage app on your desktop, is just a SQLite file. And you can open it up and read it. I thought it would be encrypted, but it's not. And then also like your iPhotos has a SQLite database, and inside of the SQLite database is all the information about, like, I once saw somebody crack it open, and it will tell you like who it thinks is in each photo, what is in, like if you search dog on iMessage, it will bring up photos of actual dogs. So all of that metadata about your photos needs to be stored somewhere, right? And you can't store that in EXIF because that would, if you have 10,000 files, you would have to parse every single file before you execute the search. So Apple just sticks all that metadata in a SQLite database on your device, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And SQLite can be hosted if you want. Why would you pick a SQLite host, Wes? What would be a reason for that?
Yeah, it's extremely simple to use. It does serverless super well. And there's lots of really great hosting options out there as well. So Cloudflare D1 is SQLite API. So you can use Drizzle with Cloudflare D1. It's extremely cheap, extremely fast to be able to do these types of things. I'm sure there's some pros and cons to the differences between the two, but Cloudflare uses it for a lot of their own stuff. So I would feel pretty confident in that type of thing. Fly.io uses it as well. Bun, which is another JavaScript runtime. We've had Jared on the show in the past. He just teased the fact that you can import. So Bun also comes with a SQLite adapter built right in. And I love that because you can just get up and running with SQLite with very, very quickly. But they also now teased being able to import a SQLite database in your JavaScript files with JavaScript import assertions. So import assertions is something new to JavaScript where you import a file and you can say as text, as JSON, and they're building an import assertion for SQLite. So you can say as SQLite, and then it'll just return the whole database connection. Big fan.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? I don't know how I feel about that, but I'm sure, you know, one thing about Bun that's interesting is they do a lot of things that are very like user focused in terms of like stuff you might want to do. But I do have concerns about, man, like the amount of stuff they're adding to that.
Yeah.
API service.
On one hand, there's standards. And on the other hand, there's the nice stuff that's added, but like they're doing it in, it's not like a, like a Vite, you know, like Vite does a lot of non-standard stuff. You just import a CSS file and boom, you have the CSS, right? Like that's not a JavaScript thing. But Bun is doing it in a way that is using import assertion. So theoretically you could write a loader that handles that some way. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's the end game there.
It for some reason it feels weird to me as a runtime and not as a library. I don't know, a bundler. You know, I don't know why that feels weird to me. I like the niceties, I should say that. All right.
Totally.
Let's get into the next part, which is defining your data structures. And in Drizzle, just like many ORMs, one of the ways that you do that is through what's called a schema. And, or as Wes would say, a schema.
Schema.
Yeah. And a schema is basically an outline of how your data is laid out within the database itself. This includes data types, property names, and in Drizzle's case, column names. You have those as kind of like separate concepts, where sometimes it's like the column name is always going to be directly matched to the property name. In Drizzle, you have to specify the property name and the column name itself when you declare. And that's cool. But this is a basic way that you can, again, define the structure of your database overall as a whole. And that includes things like relations, default values, things that are non-null, primary keys for things that need to be indexed or indexes in general, relations themselves, and maybe perhaps like the length of field and options for various fields. In some other ORMs, this is done through domain specific languages. So
DSLs.
DSLs, yes. We use a Prisma on the Syntax website, and that's done through a specific Prisma schema file, which is a .prisma file. And that's kind of its own syntax, right? In GraphQL, you have a schema file. That's a GraphQL syntax. In Drizzle, the schema is a straight up JavaScript function. It's a function. You do, in our case, or my case, in my Postgres Drizzle, you do a PG table function. You give it the table name, and then the second parameter in that function is an object with all of the values in that table. And that's it, you know, and that's actually kind of one of the things that makes Drizzle really interesting, is that everything is very JavaScript first, right?
Very explicit too, hey?
Very explicit. Yes.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of doing the schemas directly in JavaScript. So the huge benefit to that is something we'll get into in just a sec, but it's typed. It's fully typed. Yes. And it's all in JavaScript. So the changes to your schema immediately ripple their way throughout your entire code base. You still do need Drizzle Kit to generate your schema, because at the end of the day, Drizzle is generating SQL, right? It's generating the queries that need to be sent to your SQL database, and it's generating the SQL files that will modify what your schema looks like. And things like that is like, oh, I added a field to the podcast called release date. And that is, it's a name of release date. It's required every single time. It has a default value, if we want to, of next Tuesday. And et cetera, right?
Yeah. And I should say, to interrupt there, you only need to use Drizzle Kit to connect your schema if you're having Drizzle handle your migrations and your table creation. Because you could do all of this by hand if you were SQL-y enough. And that wouldn't be a problem. Because in your JavaScript code, you're just importing the schema itself, because it is JavaScript. You're not importing anything generated necessarily. Yes. But if you do have Drizzle manage your migrations and stuff, that's when you want that connection there.
Yes. Yeah, that's a really good point. Oh, one thing we didn't say is, like, can we just quickly talk about the two things that we built using Drizzle and what database we're using? Ahead first. I think yours is more interesting.
Okay, cool. Yeah, mine is more interesting, and it is open source, so you can check it out. I'll have a link to that in the show notes. Basically, I'm working on a habit tracker. I mentioned this in our productivity episode, and it's called that. It's at habitpath.io if you want to check it out. But it's basically like a simple habit tracker. And that's a really good project to build because it's more interesting than a to-do list, right? Because you have relations. It essentially is kind of to-do list-like. You have a thing you're adding to the database, and then you check if it has it existing. And we have some relations there. And I also have user accounts. So if you want to see how authentication, and I rolled my own authentication, if you want to see how that's put together, you can check out the repo for that. So I have several tables in mind. I have, so a habit is a table. It has a relationship where one habit has many checks. A check has one habit. Check is just, hey, on this day you checked it off. There's also a user table. A user table has a relation to a session. There's a user sessions. There's also a wait list for users. In addition to that, there is users have checks and habits. So there's also many-to-many relationships there. So if you want to see how relationships and user accounts and those things are done, it's a pretty good example of that.
So what I built was something to track where syntax is on the podcast charts. So we want to be able to see where we are, especially in relation to other podcasts that are within the sort of coding spectrum. We just want to kind of keep tabs on where we're at as we go up and down the charts. And we pay for this thing called Chartable, and it works pretty good, but it doesn't give us all of the data that we want. So I was like, well, you know what? I love writing scrapers. So I built a quick little scraper that it scraped the iTunes top 250 and the Spotify top 50. That's all that's available for both of those. And then usually when I'm building this type of stuff, I'm just like, oh, okay, I need to save this data. So like my go-tos when I'm building something really quickly like that is A, JSON stringify it and throw it in a file. Or B, I've used a couple different like FileDB node adapters in the past, which will give you really quick schema list being able to just add and remove it. The downside of that is you don't get like full typing. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to use Drizzle for that this time, because you can get up and running with a Drizzle database, especially SQLite. You don't have to go set something up and port forward or all this silliness. You can just make a SQLite file on your local file system and boom, you have a database. And then probably in 15 lines of code, you have your schema up and running and you have full-blown query syntax for it. So we have scrapes, and then we have scrape items, which is basically every single podcast that is on that chart. And then each item has things like the rank it is, the name of it, thumbnail, etc. So pretty nice little example that I was able to just quickly throw stuff in a database and be able to query it. I used Cloudflare D1 there, which was a little bit tricky because it's not like a standard. It doesn't just give you a SQLite connection string. It's a little bit more funky, but I was able to sort of work my way around it.
Yeah, totally. And I use Neon, by the way, for mine. So if you want to see Neon, you can check out mine. Cool. Let's talk about relational data. Relational data I found to be pretty easy. I did have some like I had some bang my head against the wall moments because I had a string out of place. It was one of those things where I had, what did I have? I had in my habits relation, my relation was on habits. And I said that habits have many checks rather than checks have many habits. And it was giving me some kind of obtuse error. And I was just like, what is wrong with this? I've used this over and over again. I've compared it to the docs. What's going on? And it's just like one of those things where you're just, when you look at it visually, you're swapping those two words. And the worst kind of bug, right? Because you really think, I was really convinced that I had my code right. I don't know why I was so convinced, because I was getting an error and I was following the docs, but I was so convinced for some reason that it wasn't my fault. Of course it's my fault.
that's one thing that I found that I really like with Prisma is Prisma has a, I don't know if it's an ESLint plugin or some sort of linter, and it will immediately tell you when you goof something up. And I found that, and I only saw later that there also is a Drizzle ESLint plugin. So maybe this does the same thing, but I found the same thing where I was just trying stuff and oh, it didn't work, or oh, I spelled this thing wrong. And I feel like maybe that could be improved a little bit, or maybe I was not using the ESLint plugin correctly or at all.
Yeah, that's one thing with a domain specific language too, right? You have to have that tooling for that domain specific language to be effective. In TypeScript, yes, TypeScript will save you from all the things that it can, but there's some things it can't save you from, right? Can't save you from the things that it's like intentional, right? I did this intentionally.
Yeah.
It passes all the TypeScript checks, but it's still incorrect. So that's, you can define many-to-many relations, one-to-one relations, one-to-many relations, one-to-one relations, one-to-many relations. Any of the relation types you want, you can define those inside of your schema. And then what's nice about relations inside of Drizzle, which I found the docs to be kind of non-descriptive about this, which
yes,
is kind of annoying. When you're doing a query with something that has a valid relation, you really straight up just have to say with the thing. So for instance, if I have a habit that has checks, right? I can say, hey, give me all of this user's habits. And then in that selection, in that query, all I have to say is with colon checks colon true. That's it. And it's going to give me the checks. Now, granted, if you want to limit that further, you just have to have a object instead of true where you have, again, a query selection thing.
Like in there, the fields you want instead of the whole
thing.
The fields
you want.
Yeah.
Or perhaps a filtering of based on, oh, I only want checks from this date range. For me, that was the thing. So I could have a date range then as being that parameter in there. But for the most part, I found that syntax to be lovely. I found it to be really nice to work with. The documentation for that I found to be a little bit less lovely. I had to like guess on
some
things
and
figure it out. Yeah, a little sparse. I want to see more examples. Yeah.
Yeah, I found it really helpful to just search common Drizzle queries on GitHub. Mm-hmm. Just to see how other people are specifically doing it. Because that's the other thing. There's this website called Answer Overflow. Have you seen this starting to pop up?
No.
On your Google searches?
No, I have not.
Because a lot of the Q&A has moved into Discord. And that kind of sucks because it's not globally available. So I don't know who Answer Overflow is or what this company is, but
search all of Discord.
Somebody, and I've been finding a lot of Cloudflare and Drizzle question and answers on Answer Overflow because somebody had asked it in Discord and now they're surfacing it, which is genius. I always find that really frustrating about Discord is that
the
questions
worst part
go
about
to
Discord.
Die or chat in general, just questions there go there to die unless you explicitly go to the chat room and search for it.
If Discord really wanted to step up their game, here's what you do. You index all of the forum type posts. You make them publicly available. There. Thank you. That would be great. Because you're right. It is obnoxious to not be able to search that stuff, to find that stuff when you want it. I've been, one thing I did, you know, I liked a lot about Prisma was that ChatGPT specifically,
yeah,
like has a lot more answers for Prisma.
Totally.
So if I could say, give me a schema that does this in ChatGPT, it always spit it out. And then Drizzle, it would just hallucinate something, which was not helpful. But I did find that the Drizzle AI, Drizzle's docs have their own like AI in the documentation, and in the menu bar, there's an Ask AI button. I found you can paste in whole ass snippets into this thing and then say, hey, what's wrong with this? Or what am I doing wrong here or whatever? And it was very good at using Drizzle's own documentation or whatever it's using as their data source to be able to answer that stuff. I found it was much better, obviously, than going to ChatGPT for that.
Yeah, they say it's powered by this thing called InKeep. And I'd be curious to see how much additional data past the docs have they supplied it.
Yeah, right. Is it the whole code base? What is it? Because I did find way better answers that way.
One other cool thing about schemas is they have this introspection and pull. I mentioned this earlier, is that you can pull down a schema from an existing database, and it will then translate that to the actual TypeScript files that are needed. I think that would be, I didn't use that myself, but if I have an existing SQL file and I want to interface with that database via Drizzle, you don't really want to rebuild the entire schema and hopefully match it one-to-one with what your MySQL database is. You want to do the opposite, right? So what I think would be really cool is if we took the Syntax website, pulled the schema down from the Syntax website, which is just an SQL schema, right? It's generated by Prisma, puts it into SQL schemas. And then if we were to pull it down and translate it to Drizzle, that's pretty wild that you could do that.
I've not seen or tried that, but
no, hey. Me neither. But I'm going to try it after the show because I think that would be really nifty just to see how well it does. And theoretically, it should work because that's the thing with Drizzle as well. It's just you can only do stuff in Drizzle that converts to SQL, right? You can't. Yeah. It's not adding extra layers of validation or whatever to you. There, I guess that's maybe not true because you can set functions to generate default values and that runs in JavaScript. But it tries to push you in the way of like, no, don't use JavaScript for default values. Use the SQL template tag. That will generate your default values. Try to keep everything in the database. Sometimes people forget this. It's like a database has its own language, right? And you can generate defaults and generate timestamps in SQL rather than in JavaScript.
Word. All right, we got to get moving here a little bit. So let's talk about TypeScript really quick. This thing is fully typed, which means it is really nice to work in TypeScript in general. Like we mentioned, whether you're doing schemas or queries or any of that stuff, it's going to yell at you. You know, one thing I really like about the query syntax, which we'll talk a little bit about, is that you do db.query and then it auto-populates your schema options and you have that all there. And it tells you if you're trying to do something that does not make sense, it tells you just about every step of the way. So gotta love that integration there.
I don't know how we ever lived with databases and having not things typed or even like
I'd be screwed.
My database for my course platform right now is I generated all the types from MongoDB, but they weren't perfect. So then I went in and like tweaked them a little bit manually, but this is making me want to switch entirely to a fully typed ORM because what a thing of beauty for having literally every property, every column that is returned, every type just ripple throughout your entire application. And then if you're using like a meta framework, your schema is then transferred to your queries. Your queries return data that is fully typed on the back end. You can pass that data to your front end, and then you have full typings all the way through from your schema to your front end, and you never have to worry about mistyping. Or the big one for me, I always use like dot title instead of dot name. You shouldn't have to fuss about that.
Word. Next up is migrations. You know, a migration is basically anytime you make a modification to your database, whether that is adding new columns or changing the default values of columns or creating tables, any of that stuff, that anytime the database itself is changed, you need to write SQL code to change that database. And a migration is essentially a file that has some commands for the database. And so a migration file could just be, say, create table if not exists, the table, the properties. And then when that file is run, it will create that table if it doesn't exist. Now, the thing about migrations is that over time, our database evolves. Typically, you're adding fields. Sometimes you're changing fields. And a migration file is basically just a file with instructions. And the way Drizzle does it is it puts them all into a folder. It has here's step one, then step two, then step three, step four, whatever. And then that way, when you run the Drizzle Kit migration script, what it does is it just kind of goes through those step by step to make sure that your database is set up to be the exact way that the ORM expects it to be. That way, everything is in connection. It is all related very specifically. Migrations can be a giant pain in the butt if things kind of get out of sync. These files are generated. You typically aren't wanting to go in there and delete them. That would be a disaster. That would make me go nuts. But, you know, these things also, for migrations within Drizzle, unlike other things, which I don't necessarily understand why this is, maybe I'm just being a dumb guy here, you have to write your own migration script, your own TypeScript file, which is really just simply, hey, connect to your database and then run await migrate and then pass it in a folder. Like, why do I got to write that file? It's fine, whatever. I wrote it. It's fine. But you got to do that. So first you run drizzlekit generate. And what generate does is it goes ahead and it looks and sees what's changed in your schema from the way that the database is to the way that your schema is. And it generates a migration file that's sequential. And once that file is generated, you can then run the migration script to then step by step go through all of those files.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of this migration. So you can put those in your version control and you can see the history. So like if Scott drops table and adds three new columns to it, and then he pushes that up to version control, and then I still have my local database, which has not been updated, but the code has been, then I'm able to see, okay, I need to run these migrations in order to update my local database so the schema looks exactly like what this application is expecting.
Word.
Let's talk about querying and selecting data. There's two ways to pull data out of Drizzle. There's queries and there is select. I'm curious, which one did you use, Scott?
I started using select because a lot of the docs are written in select.
Yeah.
But the moment I found out you could use query, I used query because I prefer that style of syntax. I'm not a SQL guy. I prefer a nice ORM syntax. And with the fact that you have TypeScript support and query could help you out along the way, it was nice for me to do that. So, it wasn't necessarily a value add for me to use the select style SQL control syntax.
Yeah.
So I used the query syntax where I could. That said, I think this is a part where the docs really fail.
I
think
agree.
The way the docs should have is every single example in the docs should be like, you know, some have like TypeScript and JavaScript tabs or whatever for the docs. They need to have a tab that shows the query syntax and the select syntax side by side in a tab version where you can see both of them.
Maybe I'll explain real quick the difference between them. So, the select is full SQL control. It looks a lot more like writing SQL. And you often have to import different methods like equals, not equals, greater than. You have to import those methods and use them to build your query. And you also have to import your schema values. So you just say select from, you got to import the user schema and pass it in. So I did it the select way because all of the examples for SQLite were in select. And I thought, if you're using SQLite, you can't use the queries. But that's wrong. You can use the queries. And the queries is much nicer, in my opinion. You'll probably, if you're listening to this, you probably want the query syntax, unless you're some sort of diehard SQL writer. And it's much nicer. So I would probably go towards query. But you're right. Like, I thought for the longest time, select is only for SQLite, but it's just because all the examples are written in select.
Word.
One thing I'm not going to spend too much time on is just views. Views is just a database thing in general. It's sort of like a virtual database that can contain data from multiple tables. So at a database level, you can create sort of, we call them aggregations in MongoDB, but kind of similar.
They call them aggregations too.
Okay, so if you have like, all right, I want a user's view and it has all the user's tasks and if they've completed them or not. Like that might be two or three tables for you, Scott, and you want to pull them all in. So you can create a database view which has all of that data in and you can specify what people have access to, generate secure things, or never query the password field because this view should never be able to have access to it. So there's full support for that in Drizzle. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I will say I don't necessarily relate those to aggregations, though.
No? Okay.
Yeah, because aggregations, even in Mongo or in this, are kind of like you're doing lots of steps. So you're running a
query. Yeah, you could like reduce them, right?
Yeah, you're doing like a reduce or a combination or a group by kind of thing, yeah.
So I'll tell you an example of when I've used a view before, and that was... Yeah, you're right. That was because I was trying to calculate how many courses I had sold and the dollar value for that. And when I was getting, what I was doing is I was just querying all of those and then running a JavaScript reduce over them and then adding them all up. That got really, really slow once I got past several thousand courses, right? So I had to move that logic to the database layer because it's way faster to do it in the database. So yeah, I guess that's not necessarily a view though, because a view would be like, all right, let me grab a list of users, but also join their courses in and also select the progress from all of their videos. And each user is going to be one line in the column. And I can just use that as if it were a virtual table.
Word. Cool. Yeah, totally. Next up is limitations. What are some limitations that you ran into? Because I didn't hit too many limitations myself in terms of where Drizzle was the issue.
This is not really a Drizzle issue, but you often need to insert or query in multiple values. So I hit this both with Prisma and PlanetScale, and then I also hit it with Cloudflare D1. And that is, I was sending too much data in a single query to insert. So I was looping over 150 rankings, and each one had, so that's 150 inserts, right? Mm-hmm. I tried to do it in a single go, which was a transaction. And transactions are nice because if one of those inserts goofs up for whatever reason, the whole thing will roll itself back and you don't have like incomplete data being inserted. Both in the syntax website, when I was inserting the words that are associated with transcripts, too large. Mm. I think it's more of a limitation of timeouts on serverless functions, but yeah, immediately threw up an error. Too much data you're sending. So I had to like break it down into smaller incremental writes.
Word. Yeah, I didn't hit anything weird or anything like that. Another thing here is transactions. Transactions are something you can do with Drizzle where it's you're running multiple steps in one logical unit. Basically, you're saying, if I have a multi-step thing, I need to do this, then this, then this, and I want to treat it as one functional unit of steps, right? Then that's when you would use a transaction because these things always need to happen in this specific, not only order, but we need to have nothing interrupting these, right? We need this to happen in a chunk. And so that's when you'd reach for a transaction. Again, this is way more for complex operations, not necessarily something you need to do for most basic usage. But typically, if you need a transaction, you'll kind of know it. So one last thing before we get out of here, I do want to say I made a Syntax Drizzle studio theme for fun, just because I was, you know, procrastinating. So I have a link to it here, drizzle.studio themes, whatever. It's a long key. But there's a Syntax podcast theme. If you're using Drizzle Studio, you can go search for it. It just uses our yellow and black colors. It's pretty cool. But yeah, that's it.
So if you want to check it out, we'll have a link to the Drizzle ORM. It's orm.drizzle.team. They have sort of, the devs behind it are pretty hilarious. So they used to have a pricing page. Do they still have it? They had a pricing page that just said like, psych. You know, like, yeah, it's not a paid product at all. They took that off though, which makes me wonder if they are going to be offering. You got to think they got to make money on this somehow.
The testimonials thing always kind of turned me off, because I was like, they had a testimonials where it was just people saying bad things about Drizzle, which like,
oh yeah.
Yeah, I get it. It's funny, but it did kind of turn me off a little bit initially. That and the fact that I didn't want to write my own migrations. But, you know, I think I've come around. I'm trying not to be too much of a curmudgeon about stuff like that. Doesn't matter.
Awesome. Let's move into sick picks and shameless plugs.
Yeah. Hey, I have a sick pick. I don't know if you've sick picked to this before. I vaguely remember people talking about this on the show. The BlackBerry movie. Have you seen the BlackBerry movie?
Oh yeah, we've talked about it like four times on the show.
That's what I'm saying. I have a memory of it, but I don't have a vivid memory of it. And we just watched it last night. So I just watched the BlackBerry movie last night. If you haven't seen it, I thought it was awesome, in case you haven't gotten that impression already from watching the show. But yeah, I thought it was really super good. And I didn't necessarily know any of the story. And if you're a fan of Glenn Howerton, gosh, he is, his unbridled rage in this so movie good. Is on full display. From
It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, Dennis.
Yeah, it's very good. And it's got Michael Ironside in it. I'm a big Michael Ironside fan, Total Recall and stuff. So yeah, big fan, BlackBerry movie, if you haven't seen it.
There, Hamilton was in it. So Jim Pasilli tried to buy the Bulldogs.
Pittsburgh Penguins, my favorite team.
Oh, but no, he first tried to buy Oh, no, he tried to bring an NHL team to Hamilton. That was it. He didn't try to buy our local
team. It was
team.
The Penguins.
Oh, yeah. He was going to bring it to Hamilton.
The Penguins, they were going through a huge drought at that time. They, you know, they were really bad. This is pre-Sidney Crosby. And a lot of people were trying to buy them. The team was in dire straits. They were trying to move them to Kansas City or all kinds of places. And at the end of the day, Mario Lemieux ended up buying them and kept them in Pittsburgh.
Wow. Yeah, that was a fantastic
hockey
movie.
Facts for you.
I would almost watch that again. And I don't think I've ever watched a movie more than once, aside from Wet Hot American Summer.
Oh, that's, yeah, that's great. I love Wet Hot American Summer.
I'm going to stick pick a candle warmer. I got this for my wife for Christmas, and we freaking love it. So what this is it's a beautiful little lamp that has a halogen bulb in it, and you put a candle underneath it, and it just melts the wax and leaves your house smelling amazing. And there's no flame. You don't have to worry about your house burning down or turning it off. It has a timer on it, and it makes your candles last so much longer. Like one of the Bath and Body Works candles, like the big three wick ones. I don't know. We probably got 30, 35 hours out of it, and we're probably 20% left on the candle. So it looks so nice. It smells great, and you don't have to be burning. There's also stuff around, like, you shouldn't be burning candles indoors all day long because it's makes your lungs black, which is a bummer. Everything is bad for you these days, but
everything is bad, but it's true. It's just because we're getting smarter. It's not because we're getting softer or something.
Yeah, I kind of like being a little not in the know about these things, but we fixed the candle situation. We still burn candles, obviously, but this is really, really nice. And I'll link up the one that we got.
Board.
I'm a little bit worried about buying bulbs for it, though, because in Canada, for a long time, all the bulbs have been LED. And I think you can still buy halogen bulbs. It has to get hot enough. When my daughter's Easy Bake oven broke, I had a hell of a time finding a new bulb for it that got hot enough to bake a cake.
Oh, yeah.
And finally, I found like a special one that is for, it's called Rough Service. It's like 100 watts and it's for lighting up construction sites, which is dumb thing to spend money on because LEDs are way better for construction sites.
I had a you know those, like, what are those twisty light bulbs?
Oh yeah, CFL.
So I had for my lighting setup in my studio, I had this giant CFL bulb, like larger than a football, like just massive one. And I wasn't using those lights anymore in my office because I got LED ones. And I had these giant bulbs because I bought a few of them in bulk. And I've started using them in parts of my basement because they're super, in the furnace room. I put one of them in the furnace room and it's massive. It looks hilarious, but it lights up the room like nothing else.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Our house had those as well. It lights up the whole, I took them out and replaced them with strip LED lights because I kept hitting them. I smashed one and there's just like explode. Poison in those things, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did replace a lot of those in the basement too with those strip LED lights because they are very, very cheap and super bright.
Awesome. Shameless plugs. Check out the Syntax TikTok. It's at TikTok.net. Whatever. Just look up Syntax FM. We're on there. Hit the follow. Leave us a comment. If you see somebody leaving a mean comment, just bait them. Make them comment more. It really helps the algo.
That is actually good. Somebody was trolling us the other day on TikTok by posting a quote from, oh man, I forget who, somebody famous. They posted a quote from somebody famous because we talked about not liking quotes inside of our productivity episode. So that was really, really fun.
Oh, that's great. All right. Thanks for tuning in. Catch you later.
Peace. Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.